Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Thursday, May 4th, and we are in lovely Olmsted County. It is great to be here. We're very pleased that we've been able to resume our travel calendars now that the COVID pandemic is behind us, or hopefully behind us. I am joined this morning on the bench by Judge Kevin Ross and Judge Peter Reyes. The first matter on the calendar for oral argument is Susan Schneider versus Max Schmidt and K-Max Paradise Pork. You will each have 15 minutes to make your argument. I understand, counsel for respondent, you will both be presenting argument and splitting the time evenly. So each of you will have 7.5 minutes. You can see the timing is indicated in the clock up in front of the podium. And please make sure you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument, because we are making a recording of this for our records. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Matthew Berger. I'm appearing on behalf of appellant Susan Schneider. This case presents a question of whether a minority owner of a business entity has any practical and effective recourse under Minnesota law against a majority owner who disregards corporate formalities and unilaterally liquidates the sale of business assets and distributes the sale proceeds for his own personal benefit. Ms. Schneider respectfully requests that this court hold that her claims for breach of fiduciary duty, unfairly prejudicial conduct, and breach of a member control agreement are direct claims that belong to her personally and not derivative claims that belong to the company.
So in terms of the precise relief, what would happen if we agree with you? What would you ask this court to do?
Your Honor, we would ask the court to reverse the district court's entry of summary judgment on the claims as they relate to Mr. Schmidt and K-Max Farms and remand the case for trial on those claims. And specifically, it's the portions of count one, count two, and count four that the district court ruled were derivative claims. Now, after proceedings in this case, the district court reviewed the evidence and concluded that Mr. Schmidt, who effectively had control of K-Max Farms, and so effectively controlled two-thirds of the ownership interest of K-Max Paradise Pork, unilaterally sold the assets of Paradise Pork without going through the proper corporate formalities, and importantly, without granting Ms. Schneider her notice of dissenter's rights. Mr. Schmidt then took the sale proceeds and did not distribute those proceeds to Ms. Schneider, as he was required to do after Ms. Schmidt invoked her dissenter's rights and under the terms of the member control agreement, but instead took those proceeds and paid obligations that the company was not obligated to pay.
Didn't the district court, though, in the trial against Paradise Pork, in fact, provide the relief for the injury that you're describing, the fact that proceeds of the sale were distributed without your client's input?
Your Honor, the district court granted relief against a company that no longer had any assets to pay that judgment because Mr. Schmidt had previously taken all of the sale proceeds and distributed them for his own benefit. So the court granted relief against the company, but the harm that we're asking for and that we're seeking to recover against Mr. Schmidt is for the wrongful distribution of the assets during that liquidation and winding up process, which effectively, practically speaking, left Ms. Schneider with no real remedy. She has a judgment against a company that has no assets. And the company has no assets because of Mr. Schmidt's wrongful conduct.
So the district court granted the damages that she sought, well, in terms of the distribution, saying, okay, she owned a third, so she's entitled to a third of the distribution minus any other outstanding debts owed, I think it was 250 or something like that, and then there's some cash of 100 plus. And then the district court said she gets a third. So why isn't that a satisfaction of her rights? And what more is there that's missing?
Your Honor, what's missing is the assets to satisfy that, to make Ms. Schneider whole because of the wrongful conduct that occurred during that process. So to be clear, the judgment that the district court entered was on count three, which was the dissenter's rights claim against the company itself. The injury that we're here for today occurred after the sale, when the assets of or the proceeds from the sale were distributed. And in fact, there's evidence in the record that they were intentionally distributed for the specific purpose of denying Ms. Schneider the remedy that she sought for her dissenter's rights. In other words, Mr. Schmidt specifically, and this is documented in an email that's block quoted in our brief, specifically drained the company of the assets that would be necessary to satisfy the judgment that Ms. Schneider would eventually get.
But doesn't some of that inure to your client's benefit in the sense that she had a personal liability that was extinguished?
Your Honor, theoretically, yes, but the loan that Ms. Schneider had was a loan that she personally owed and that Mr. Schmidt guaranteed. The company did not have that liability.
I understand that, but in terms of if she would have received more money, if she had a judgment that was enforceable right now for $900,000, wouldn't she need to pay back that loan?
Over time, Your Honor, and that's the key here, is the loan was current. It was not due at the time. Ms. Schneider had been making the monthly payments and had the right to continue to make those monthly payments on the loan and use that capital for any reason she wanted.
So the damages then would be the difference between the capital that she may have gained if she had gotten the sum and versus, as opposed to what she actually received?
Your Honor, I think the damages would need to be ultimately determined on remand.
Right, but the nature the basis for there being any harm.
Your Honor, I believe that the damages on Ms. Schneider's claims would be the amount of the judgment that she has against the company on count three, the fair value of her membership interest. There may be other equitable claims that could be brought back based on the satisfaction of that debt that could offset or could adjust that. Those claims haven't been asserted, but if the district court allowed that, those would be equitable claims that would be a separate recovery for money had and received or some other theory.
But just so I understand the theory that you explained to us, the basis for the damage, the harm that was suffered is the loss of the present value of the funds that were paid on her behalf.
Yeah, the fair value of her membership interest, yes.
I have a couple more questions. So when going back to the loan, the $600,000 loan, which was co-signed by Mr. Schmidt as well, correct?
Guaranteed, yes.
Guaranteed. But it sounds like your position is that isn't a debt that had to be paid outright. It could have been, in other words, it wasn't like the out of the $900,000 that she would have been entitled to, they would have had to subtract out a certain, either some or all of that $600,000 from her payment.
Correct. It was not immediately due. It was to be paid over time.
Okay. And I want to go back to counts 1, 2, and 4, and in particular the claims there. And if I understood you correctly, you're saying that the damages to her occurred after the sale, or I'm sorry, after the vote to sell it and when the distributions were made after those agreements had been entered into, correct? Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's the claims that we are here on today. In the case, there were other claims that were brought. They're no longer part of the case.
Okay, and so one of your key arguments is that the district court erred by determining that counts 1, 2, and 4 did not have any direct claims in them, and there are a number of claims within each of those counts. What specific claim or claims are, from your position, are direct claims, and what's the support for them being a direct claim? And I'll just give you an example. So a number of them seem to be seem to go more toward an injury to the company rather than an injury to Ms. Schneider.
Yes, Your Honor. So there were claims in the case to the effect that Mr. Schmidt interfered with Ms. Schneider's ability to manage the company, and that caused harm. We're not arguing that those are direct claims here. We concede that those are derivative claims that harm the company.
Okay, thank you.
What we are arguing here is that once Mr. Schmidt unilaterally sold the company's assets, it entered into a wind-up process and had obligations to creditors and shareholders of the company to distribute those assets according to the agreements and according to law. So once the company made the decision that we're no longer operating, we're liquidating our assets, that creates new obligations that are direct to the shareholders and to creditors of the company. The company no longer has an independent interest in operating a business. It's winding up its business. And the case law that we cited, going back to the Young case and more recently the explanation distinguishing Young in the Ashbach case, clearly recognize that there is a fundamental difference once a corporation enters a wind-up mode.
Is that because the nature of the harm or the injury changes, that there can be no injury to a company that doesn't exist and can only be an injury to the members?
That's absolutely what Ashbach explains, that at that time, the company no longer has that independent interest. It's no longer taking its assets and using it to make a profit or to engage in business. It's now satisfying its obligations and closing up shop. And those obligations are direct obligations first to creditors and then to shareholders for the value of those assets. So the at that moment, the nature of that harm changes and becomes a direct injury to the shareholder.
Okay, so going back to my original question, what specific claims within those counts support or what specific claims within those counts are direct claims?
The claims that allege that Mr. Schmidt improperly distributed the sale proceeds for his personal benefit.
And maybe you can answer this on a rebuttal, but I'm curious as to what specific, I mean, is that going to, you know, the count 1G, attempted to sell assets and property of Paradise Pork for a price below the market value and without proper notice, or are you talking D, acted in excess of their authority with regard to the property and assets of Paradise Pork? I'm just trying to figure out which, because I'm not sure, I'm just speaking for myself, I'm not sure all those are clearly direct claims, but to the extent that you're arguing specific ones, what specific ones?
So, Your Honor, I don't have the letters, but it would be number one, engaged in self-dealing. Number two, acted in excess of authority with regard to property and assets of Paradise Pork. Improperly attempted to dissolve the company and attempted to sell the assets and property without proper notice, member meeting, governor meeting, and without providing any statutory notice.
Okay. Is it your position that any one of those would be, if any one of those are a derivative, or a direct that would support the count then?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And partial summary judgment, again, we're not arguing that the district court erred in granting partial summary judgment on the claims that arise from the mismanagement while the company was operating or any of that. Where it's the specific facts that fall under those broad statements that tie to the distribution of the assets that we say are direct claims under counts one and count two, and then count four, the member control agreement doesn't have the letters, but would be the same factual basis.
Okay. But so you said, for example, improperly attempted to dissolve Paradise Pork. Doesn't that occur before? Is that something that occurs after?
Your Honor, it's a little messy here. Typically, a corporation would file a notice that would begin a wind-up process, and then liquidate assets. and then would file formal paperwork to end the corporate existence. Here, those formalities were ignored, and what happened was the liquidation of the assets occurred, the funds were distributed, and then no further action was taken to formally do anything until the Secretary of State administratively dissolved the entity when they didn't file annual renewals. That's why we worded it attempted to dissolve, because in fact, they effectively liquidated and dissolved, but they didn't go through the normal formal corporate formalities of that. And Your Honor, I want to emphasize here that the effect of what was done here was to deprive Ms. Schneider of her statutory dissenter's rights. And that was intentional, as I said, and we know that from the emails. She had a right to recover the fair value of her assets when the company decided to sell substantially all of its assets, and the funds were intentionally distributed to deprive her of that access to capital, which she could have used potentially to reinvest with the buyer or for any other investment purpose or other purpose she wanted.
Great. Thank you, Counsel. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And I'm not certain who we are hearing from first, but I'm sure you will tell us. You will each have 7.5 minutes. We'll just take a minute to get the... can we put 7.5 minutes on the timer? That would be great. And we won't have a situation where one of you takes the other half's time.
Our clock is antiquated.
I was going to say, this is low tech.
I felt every second yes. going there.
It's a 7.5 minute procedure.
All right. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Devin Driscoll, and I represent respondents Max Schmidt and K-Max Farms, LLC. I want to untangle a little bit of procedural confusion that I heard during the court's discussion with appellant just a moment ago. The count three claim as to respondents Schmidt and K-Max Farms LLC, the court determined that there was no liability as to.
All right, that was the claim against Paradise Pork.
That's right. And that question of whether there could be liability against respondents Schmidt and K-Max Farms LLC has not been appealed. So the question here for respondents Schmidt and K-Max LLC, K-Max Farms LLC, is whether the identified claims in count one and count two and then count four are direct or derivative. And the district court here followed the well-worn procedure in Minnesota law of looking not to the legal theory that the harms are couched in or anything like that, but looking at the harm alleged and determining was the harm to the company or to the individual.
And that's where I'm stuck, frankly. I mean, once we get to the point where the company's been sold and you have the assets, I mean, how did your client's unilateral decision to pay off Ms. Schneider's personal debt harm anyone or harm Paradise Pork at all?
Because those assets are still the company's assets. Even after there's the sale of the sow farm, the proceeds of that sale still belong not to the individual members yet. There's been no, you know, you have to
right,
distribute
but,
creditors.
But
and
on
things.
Behalf of Paradise Pork, you have to pay off the creditors and then you have to pay the interest to the members. We're talking about a loan that wasn't an obligation of Paradise Pork. So how could there have been any, how could the decision to use sale proceeds to pay off that loan that didn't belong to Paradise Pork be found to be anything but an injury to Ms. Schneider individually?
Your Honor, it's because the proceeds that are used for that purpose are the a company's proceeds. They belong to the company. And so the choice to, as alleged here, misappropriate those funds, they're misappropriating funds that belong to Paradise Pork. It's a corporate decision to misappropriate corporate funds. And just as in Wesson, where the Supreme Court said misappropriation is a traditional derivative claim, here that's what is alleged, that there was misappropriation of company funds. Those funds didn't belong to anyone at that point.
How did the misappropriation hurt Paradise Pork?
It couldn't satisfy other creditors. It couldn't make distributions to its members as it was required to under its operating agreement and its member control agreement. Those funds belong to Paradise Pork, and it has obligations for how it must distribute them, and it no longer can do so based on the allegations of misappropriation.
But how, why were they required to pay off that prior to paying off creditors?
I'm sorry, that?
Pay off the loan.
Well, it's alleged here that that was a misappropriation, that they weren't, they shouldn't have done that, that that payment should not have happened. The dollars that were used to pay off the loan here belonged to Paradise Pork and were used for an improper purpose. That's the allegation. And so it's a misappropriation of company funds to have paid off that loan. And misappropriation is a traditional derivative claim.
And therefore, the harm to Ms. Snyder was secondary. That's the argument that you're making.
That's right, Your Honor.
But the loan, she was on that loan, though.
That's right. But it, but as has been stated, K-Max Farm, pardon me, Paradise Pork, had no obligation to pay it. Even though it may have inured to her benefit, it wasn't the duty was to pay her proceed of her membership interest, not to pay off some loan. They couldn't have paid off her mortgage, for example. That also would have been a misappropriation, even though that may have inured to her benefit. It's a misappropriation not to just give her the money based on her membership interest for her to decide what to do with it. That's why it's a misappropriation of the use of company funds.
Why isn't it alternatively direct in the sense of the self-dealing, the idea that there's a fiduciary responsibility, one owner to one owner, regardless of the separate harm to the corporation or to the company of misappropriation of funds?
Your Honor, as pleaded in the complaint, and this is relates to count two, where there's an actual allegation of a breach of fiduciary duty towards Snyder, the court found that was a direct claim and not an indirect claim.
Right, but I understand what the district court found, but what was pleaded in count two, the first claim, was indeed self-dealing in violation of the fiduciary duty. Why isn't that a direct claim?
Sure. It's once again, it's a indirect claim because it's we're looking at who was harmed, and the harm was to the company. It's the use of company funds that creates the self-dealing is the use of company funds. And so we go back to who is harmed here, and it's the company.
Right. I understand the injury, but why isn't that an injury to the shareholders as well? Because the shareholders have a stake in the company as well. It's not just to the company itself.
They do, Your Honor.
And so when somebody breaches a fiduciary duty, if one shareholder, each shareholder has a fiduciary duty to the company and to the other shareholders, and if they breach that fiduciary duty, why isn't that a direct claim by another shareholder? We see this oftentimes in minority shareholder claims. Why isn't that the case here?
I think the difference is when we're looking at how the harm comes to the member, and the member's harm exists because they weren't able, like appellant's harm exists here because she was not able to receive the distribution of her.
Correct.
So I'm sorry if I'm not understanding your question, Your Honor.
Well, it just seems like that is a harm to the shareholder because their distribution now has been reduced by the money that has been paid to.
Undoubtedly, suppliers. But that's a secondary harm. The harm is first to the company. It no longer has the funds necessary to pay.
Okay, but isn't there a temporal issue here which has been muddled in this case? Because normally at the time of dissolution, if you follow the proper corporate formalities, that dissolution, there's no benefit to the corporation at the time because the company doesn't exist anymore. The duty then at that point is just to the creditors first and then to the shareholders. There's no duty to the company at that time, right?
Your Honor, I would disagree with that because the company still exists. Up until the notice of termination.
It still exists, but there's no company to benefit from that. The only beneficiaries are the the creditors and the shareholders at that moment in time.
May I answer, Your Honor?
You may.
Your Honor, because the company continues to exist up until the notice of termination, and agreed that the formalities here are muddled, that's one of the claims. There's always going to be that interest the company is going to have because the funds belong to the company. Until it is an empty shell and there's a termination where there are no assets, those funds belong first to the company and then it distributes them to the members.
If I ask one more follow-up question.
You may.
Thank you. But the district court used, in terms of the damages, used the asset versus a going concern, which seems to make sense to me at least because there's no business continuing on. Doesn't that seem to favor the fact that the injury at a minimum is to the shareholders as well as the creditors versus the company, which at that stage really is just an empty shell, isn't it?
It's an empty shell, but it is not an empty shell until the assets are distributed. And so after the payment to creditors, there is some amount of money whether in cash or other assets that the company will hold that then need to be distributed based on the membership share. So I would say up until the moment of termination, the company has an interest because there is a formula for which those funds need to be distributed. Those funds belong to the company, and once they're distributed, it no longer has the interest.
Thank you, counsel. We will reset the timer. We know this takes a minute. Oh, you're just ready now. We should have more people splitting time.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is Adam Hauk, and I represent K-Max Paradise Pork, LLC, in this matter. And the issue in Paradise Pork, LLC's appeal and the issue at the bench trial in this case was the computation of Ms. Schneider's, the fair value of her membership interest and what she was entitled to as a result of her one-third interest in K-Max Paradise Pork. Now, long before trial, and as I think it was touched upon earlier this morning in oral arguments, there was a special litigation committee appointed to look at specific claims that the district court had held as derivative, including in those claims were K-Max Paradise Pork's use of the sale proceeds of the company to pay off certain debts for feed, for loans from other members, notably Max Schmidt and K-Max Farms in this case, as well as the membership loan payoffs through Farm Credit, the individual loan payoffs. It is noted that Ms. Schneider did benefit from her loan payoff in the amount of $633,000as a result of that. These were all business decisions made by Paradise Pork, LLC, at the time it received the asset sales. In the briefing, neither party, in this case, disputes that business decisions are protected by the business judgment rule. And the Special Litigation Committee, or the SLC in this case, determined it was fair and reasonable for the company to use those proceeds to pay off its feed bills, its debts, and its membership loans. So it recommended to the company that they should pursue no action resulting in those claims. However, at trial in the district court, Ms. Schneider reinserted those claims back into this case. It is Paradise Pork's position that she should have been effectively collaterally estopped from bringing those claims back into this case. They were addressed earlier in the litigation. It was determined by the Special Litigation Committee, and those determinations were adopted by the district court, that those actions by the company were fair and reasonable, and that no action should be taken. So there are three issues raised in the cross-appellant's brief in this matter by Paradise Pork of why the district court erred. One was because it needed to defer to the determinations by the Special Litigation Committee. Second, and it is argued in the alternative, is that the district court was tasked for finding a fair and equitable valuation of the company and of Ms. Schneider's damages. The resulting ruling by the district court made it inequitable Ms. Schneider was allowed to keep the payoff of her personal loan exceeding $600,000 and didn't have to account for it in the fair market value of her membership shares.
But as a practical matter, this is a judgment that cannot be collected.
So what's
inequitable about the district court's double award, if you will?
Well, it puts Paradise Pork in the position where it can't pursue. So it owes Ms. Schneider these funds. I believe it was around $900,000. And the court effectively created an unjust enrichment claim by Paradise Pork against Ms. Schneider, resulting from her accepting those funds from the company, and the company understood that would be used to pay off her membership interest.
She accepted that? I thought that that loan was paid off without her input at all.
That's correct. And when I say accepted, I am alluding to Ms. Schneider never offered to pay back the funds to Paradise Pork, take out a separate loan. If she would rather have a loan, she could have taken out a separate loan, paid back the funds to Paradise Pork. If you know, Paradise Pork would have been happy to accept.
But with all due respect, it seems like you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. On the one hand, you're saying the business rule protects the decision to pay off that loan, and that it's a derivative claim. I realize it's from your co-counsel, but it's also a derivative claim because it was a misappropriation of funds, and yet somehow she should be responsible for paying it back.
Well, she's not responsible for paying it back.
But and that she received a benefit, but it's not a benefit that she asked for, and it's not a benefit that she apparently wanted at all. It's being used, it seems like it's being used as both a sword and a shield against her. So why isn't the district court's decision to not even consider that appropriate?
Because of the outcome it creates. We have now an outcome where Ms. Schneider received a benefit, we'll say, from KMAX Paradise Pork exceeding $600,000. And what the district court's ruling was, she doesn't have to account for that at all. That's not an issue regarding what the fair market value of her membership shares were or what she received for her shares in KMAX Paradise Pork. So not accounting for that creates all sorts of problems because now we have this potentially new claim now that's been created by Paradise Pork against Ms. Schneider that didn't exist before.
But it hasn't paid her anything for the $900,000, so how would it have a claim back against her?
Well, it could. And the argument that was made at trial by Paradise Pork is that, yes, she is. There's no dispute that she is owed one-third of the fair market value of her membership interest. But the argument at trial by Paradise Pork was that should be deducted from her interest. So if you know, we, as indicated in the briefing, Paradise Pork disagrees with the overall valuation the district court derived at anyway, but say for sake of argument that the $900,000 is accurate, the argument that Paradise Pork is making is that $600,000 benefit she received from the company should be deducted from that judgment that she received.
But if there's value to the claim and it's truly a derivative action, then it seems as if Paradise Pork has a viable claim against Max, no?
Well, then that's what the Special Litigation Committee investigated. Both parties, Max Schmidt, KMAX Farms, and Ms. Schneider, made claims that the district court held were derivative and asked that the Special Litigation Committee investigate those. So the Special Litigation Committee did investigate those claims against Max Schmidt and KMAX Farms, as well as Ms. Schneider. And in all cases, the Special Litigation Committee determined that all of the actions taken by the company members regarding those assets were reasonable and fair, and no action should be taken. So you're correct, and that issue was looked at by the Special Litigation Committee, but unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, the company can't do anything about it because of the determinations by the Special Litigation Committee that resulted in those claims being dismissed with prejudice by the district court. I see I'm at 5 seconds, so I'll not start anew.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Berger, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Touching on a couple of points briefly. First, with respect to Ms. Schneider's appeal and the direct versus derivative claim nature here. The fundamental distinction is the temporal distinction that we've been discussing as far as what injury occurred. If Paradise Pork had been an ongoing business, if Paradise Pork hypothetically had decided we want to sell the assets at this farm and go out and build a different farm that will be in a better location or have better equipment or be more efficient, if they were still going to be operating, it would be a different question as far as who had the interests. They had no ongoing operations at the point that they sold their assets, and there was never an intention to operate.
What's your strongest legal support for your argument that this timing makes all the difference and renders your client's claim a direct one?
Your Honor, it is Young, and it is the rationale in Ashbach for distinguishing the claim there.
But Ashbach is a non-presidential claim, so that's not binding on us at all.
No, Your Honor, it's not binding, but the court's analysis of why that claim was different and why this temporal distinction, the court's explanation is highly persuasive in recognizing that fundamental difference in the injury of why this situation is it's not a different rule. It's not an exception to the rule. It's a specific application of the broad rule that we look at who actually suffered harm and who will benefit.
Well, counsel argued that, in fact, Paradise Pork suffered harm by the misappropriation because it didn't have enough, as witness now, it doesn't have enough money to pay off its members.
Your Honor, but that's a payment to the member. The member had the interest at that time. It's a direct harm to that member. And again, that's where that distinction is critical of if Paradise Pork were going to try to go out and continue operating and say, we don't have enough assets now to buy a new farm because these funds were misappropriated.
Right. I understand that. But my question is in terms of the temporal. I think Schneider and KMAX's argument is essentially the company always has an interest in it until it's completely terminated, until it's the doors are completely closed. So in essence, there's any type of claim of that relates to misappropriation is a derivative claim. How does Young support your – well, let me ask you this question. When did that temporal action occur? When did the company terminate?
Your Honor, when the decision was made and the assets were sold, the company began a liquidation and wind-up process. Whether it called it that or not, it effectively did that, and that changed the entire situation as far as who was actually harmed. With due respect to counsel, the argument that the company has a theoretical interest in kind of paying the others who are going to be the direct beneficiaries is putting form over substance here. Yes, the corporation existed, but it existed for the sole purpose of turning hard assets into cash and distributing that out to the people who had a right to it. And those people were the ones that were harmed here. That's the practical substance of what happened.
Maybe the practical substance, but what specific case law supports the specific claims that you have, particularly in counts 1 and 2?
Again, Your Honor, I believe that it's supported by the general rule as stated in Weston, Medtronic, and countless others, but more specifically, it's the application that was set forth in Young, and again, the persuasive authority of Ashbach on the rationale for distinguishing that claim.
You're really making a sort of a dual track injury, that misappropriation of funds may have been an injury to the company, but the self-dealing, even though it arises from the same act, is an injury direct to Ms. Schneider? I'm just trying to understand if there's a distinction that you're making.
Your Honor, it's a hypothetical distinction that would have existed in this other hypothetical world where the company was still operating. It doesn't exist in the real world of the facts of this case where the company was winding up. It's all one harm here. And I was going to touch on the other claim, but I'll rely on my briefing on that.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your helpful arguments. We'll take the case under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.